When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey Eagles fans, this is Chris Franco from NJ Advanced Media, and welcome to the No Huddle Show podcast, the show where we discuss all things related to the Philadelphia Eagles. Before we begin, I want to remind you guys that you can read our content on nj.com/eagles and make sure to bookmark that to get the latest Eagles news and analysis. Today, I'm once again joined by my No Huddle Show co-host Bob Brookover and Caden Steele. Well, this is a draft recap episode. We're here. The Eagles were certainly very busy selecting their draft class. You know, Howie Roseman was making... They made 8 trades during that whole entire time, and it was pretty unpredictable seeing which way they were going to go in certain things, and they made some picks that were certainly unexpected in that terms of that. But before we dive too much into that, first I'm going to go to Bob and Caden. Guys, how are you guys doing today?
Doing great. It's a happy Thursday morning. That's it.
Yeah. Don't have much to add, but doing well, just like Bob said.
As you guys can hear, you know, for us, to take you behind the scenes, when it comes to the draft, there's a lot that goes into it, a lot of time, a lot of writing that goes on there. And before we get into it, I'm going to pat you guys, Caden and Bob. I appreciate the job you guys did on the draft. It's really good content that was put out there. I think everybody, hope if you haven't had a chance to read it yet, go back and do it. I think there's some really good pieces that you guys will enjoy. And if you to catch up, but to give you guys the Crips Notes version of that, the Eagles began with the first pick in the draft, they went and selected Toledo cornerback Quinyon Mitchell, which was kind of a surprise given that the first 14 picks of the draft were offensive players, and there's a lot of defensive players that slid down to them. One of the decisions they had to make was whether to take Mitchell or to take Alabama cornerback Terrion Arnold. So I want to start with this view, Bob. If you were in Howie's shoes and looking back on everything now, do you think the Eagles made the right pick in taking Quinyon Mitchell over Terrion Arnold?
Yeah, well, since I had been taking Quinyon Mitchell in my last mock draft, I'm going to go with Quinyon Mitchell. You know, it was one of those things. If you read the draft boards, you know, as we follow them for two plus months, you know, it was either Mitchell or Arnold that was the number one, and they were 1 and 2. How he used to say about Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, one is pepperoni, one is sausage, you can't go wrong. I don't know, you know, I suspect there's a little bit of that they felt that way with these two guys. But, you know, in the end, obviously, the guy they had higher on their draft board was Quinyon Mitchell. He certainly built a terrific resume at Toledo. I know, it's, you know, Arnold's an Alabama kid, so he obviously was playing tougher competition. But, you know, as they told us on draft day, they loved what they saw. The one box they wanted to see checked at the Senior Bowl was him playing press coverage. They saw him do that against quality receivers who went in this draft. You know, I just think they felt he was the best guy. He sure looks like the real thing. And I'll say this: the last two cornerbacks in the last two drafts who were the top cornerback picked Sauce Gardner found instant stardom with the Jets. I think he was a fourth or third pick. And then Devin Weatherspoon was the first guy last year with Seattle. He was a Pro Bowler. Sauce Gardner's been a 2-time first team all pro already. You know, so there's a chance that this kid's really good, really fast. Bad news for James Bradberry, good news for the Eagles. But yeah, I think they made the right pick.
Wow, interesting on that aspect. And when you look at that, and you mentioned that, and you mentioned Bradberry real quick, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I was curious right now, you think he's gone because of this selection?
I plan to write at some point here in the near future. I wouldn't just get rid of him because for two reasons. One is, you know, they pre-draft, they talked up about a lot about how, you know, we like having these veteran guys being the voices and the heads of these younger guys and establishing the culture. And to me, James Bradbury is an absolute pro's pro. If I was teaching a young player how to act and play the position, you know, 2 years ago, he was great at the position. I think he had according to PFF, he had the best passer rating against in all football, was a second team all pro. I let that voice get into Quinyon Mitchell's head. I think it's a great voice to have in it. And the second part is, you know, they experimented a little bit last year with him playing some slot. I don't think it worked out as well as they wanted to, but if they have him focus on it, maybe even more in 2024, is there value there? Yes. Now, what I don't know, and I suspect he, being the pro that he is, that James Bradbury is not going to make any commotion about, I don't know what his feelings are right now about their pick. But as long as he's, you know, continues to be the professional he's always been, I wouldn't be in a hurry to get rid of him. But also, on the other hand, I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, Howie every day is calling and saying, hey, you guys got any interest? You know, getting rid of his contract is that's not going to be doable. But, you know, that if he's trying to move him or if they eventually do release him, that I wouldn't be shocked by that either. But, that, you know, my feelings on it are what I just said.
Good stuff. Good stuff. And he wasn't the only defensive back that the Eagles took. It was kind of reminiscent of the 2002 draft where they took Lito Shepherd, Michael Lewis, and Sheldon Brown in those first three picks. Well, the second pick the Eagles used in second round, they actually made a trade. They sent both their second rounders. So they had 50-53. They sent both of them along with a fifth round pick to the Commanders, and they got back. They moved up to 40. They moved up basically 10 spots to select Iowa defensive back Cooper DeJean. And Caden, I'm going to go to you with this one. Do you think with what you got in DeJean, was it worth trading both of those second-round selections to the Commanders of all teams with an intra-division? Do you think that was worth the price to get DeJean?
Yeah, it was. I mean, if they had to give up, you know, both the second-rounders and they didn't get the third-rounder back in exchange and didn't swap fifths, maybe my answer would be a little bit different because that would be, you know, a more significant cost. But for the fact that in all reality, all they did really was move back one round. And you look at it, the difference between, you know, late second round picks and early third round picks isn't, you know, vast. So having the ability to go up and get one of the best players, probably the best player left on the board up to that point, either DeJean or Cooley McKinstry, it's a smart deal. And he comes in right away. And the fact that he can play cornerback, you know, on the outside, nickel corner, safety, he brings so much versatility. He's a good fit for Vic Fangio's scheme. It was the right move. You get a chance. You get a guy who can really make a difference in your secondary for the next 5-6 years, even possibly longer. You mentioned 2002, Chris, with Lito Shepherd and Sheldon Brown. They have a chance now with Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean to pair have a star, you know, tandem back there in the defensive back group. So I think it was a smart decision. We saw last year how many injuries piled up, especially at that nickel position in the secondary last year. Even the safety position, Reed Blankenship missed games. We saw Sidney Brown get hurt at the end of the year as well with the ACL. It was a revolving door. The fact that DeJean can play all three spots, it gives you a lot of versatility and injury insurance as well, which I think is smart. Two, another thing is the secondary really struggled with tackling last year. That wasn't their strength. DeJean is, you know, a great tackler from what people believe and what they've seen in college. And if he can come in and that's an area, he brings a certain level of toughness, which I think they were missing last year. And then also the special teams part of it. He was a really good returner in college, and he also adds that value. You know, if they want to use him on special teams, we'll see if they do. But there's a chance he's an elite returner. So the fact that he's versatile, he's good on special teams as well. And he's just a really sound football player. And like I said, there's at that point in the draft, once you go from pick 40, 39 to like 55, 56, there's a drop off in talent. So to get a player like that, who a lot of people thought was a first rounder, was a really good decision. I think he's going to be a good player back there with Quinyon Mitchell.
And I'll ask a follow up for you on this as well too. You know, you mentioned like to get a first round grade. Like a lot of people have first round grades on him when he adapted to. Why do you think he fell?
Yeah, I've listened to other people say this, and I kind of agree with, you know, I do think part of it is the versatility thing where it might be a good thing for the Eagles because they got a guy like Vic Fangio who's really smart. He's one of the best defensive minds in football. They might have like a vision and a true plan for DeGene, whether that's at safety or nickel or outside corner. Not every team might have that. The fact that, no one really knows what he is. Like some people are like, he could play outside corner, but he might be better at nickel. He could even be a better safety. Like everyone has different thoughts on him. And it seems like there was no general consensus opinion, at least from the outside perspective, from, you know, the media. Some people, like I said, like some people think he can't play outside corner. Some people think he can't. So if that was true inside war rooms and they can't really decide, you know, how are we going to use this guy? It's tough to use a first round pick on a guy, especially if you view him as a safety. Not a lot of safeties go in the first round anymore, unless you're Derwin James. So that might be part of it. Also, he was hurt during the pre-draft process, so maybe that knocked him a little bit, even though he went to the pro day and he performed really well. It does confuse me a little bit because he's a really good football player. And maybe a part of it as well, Chris, is when you were sitting there watching the draft, is there was a huge run of offensive players the first 15 picks. So that, that could be a part of it. It wasn't such a large, heavy offensive class. Maybe DeGene does go at the first round, but it seems like he is a first round caliber player and they got him in the second round. So it's a good deal.
Nice. Now, it's funny. A reason why I touched on, I asked both of you guys about Mitchell and Cooper DeGene is now the Eagles have just a logjam at cornerback right now. They have 12 guys are given the their position is listed as cornerback, and that's not even counting DeGene, who's just listed as a defensive back. So there's going to be a lot of the competition coming up, not only in OTAs and mandatory minicamp, but training camp when it comes up as well, too. It's a long way. I'll preface this for everybody. Everybody knows it's a long time before we see what happened, how the roster shapes out in week one. But if you had a sense today, who are, and if you go by the formula they used last year, like using six cornerbacks, I'll start with you, Bob. What six cornerbacks do you believe will be on this roster when they go down to Brazil?
Well, you know, Mekhi Gardner and Mario Goodrich, obviously, they're two of them. Tyler Hall, you know, after that, it could be anybody. those three, I'm pretty sure, aren't going to be going to Brazil. The questions are Bradbury. He's the biggest question mark on the list, as we've already gone over. Because of what we just talked about with Cooper DeGene, does that put Avante Maddox in jeopardy? They didn't immediately sign him after the season was over. They brought him back, but I wouldn't be real comfortable if I was him right now. You know, the guys who can be comfortable, I think, are probably Kelee Ringo. He's going to be there. I can't imagine they went through all this with Isaiah Rodgers to not have him around this season. Slay is going to be there. The question is, we go back to DeGene. Is he a cornerback or is he a safety? If he's being included in the list, obviously he's here. And then there's just a lot of competitions for the back end of that. I got to think Avante Maddox, if he shows up and plays well, they'd like to have that experience. Of the young guys, Eli Ricks, I would think, would have the inside track on being around just based on, how much he played last year. And, he was only a rookie last year. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Even these OTAs coming up, just watching those guys cycle in and out. Slay is probably going to be able to get plenty of rests at these OTAs. Yeah, you go in there, young fellow. You do your thing. I'll catch up.
it's very true. It's always fun seeing the vets get really helpful sometimes. Like even though small, we get small windows when it comes to looking at the ODAs. But it's funny to see when they get like, "Hey, you guys go ahead and take some extra reps from there."
We'll get a bigger window this year because of the mandatory minicamp. So we get to have you ever covered a mandatory minicamp, Chris?
Not with under. under the Sirianni regime. No. It's very it's a very rare. They were supposed to have a mini camp last year, but they said, you know what? Yeah, you guys did well in that. Right. So, yeah, it's going to be a
new thing. Especially at least we're going to get the season stuff, you know?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it because you finally get to see more what Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio are doing. So I'm looking forward to that in terms of that. Caden, you're in charge of the roster now with these 13. I'll call 13 because I'll put Jaji in there. What six are you rolling with if it's week one?
Yeah, this is going to be a tough decision for the Eagles to make. And, you know, it's a good decision. It's a lot better than it was last year when you're, like I said earlier, you're having injuries and you weren't having a lot of depth. You have a chance to have a really good secondary this year with the amount of players that you've added with, you know, Jijine coming in now and Mitchell coming in, Isaiah Rodgers being reinstated now. They're going to have a lot of tough decisions. It might be a situation in training camp where, you know, some of these players might get traded for a late round draft pick or something possibly, because there's like 9 to 10 guys on this team you could argue can make this roster. Right now, Slay is an obvious one. Quinny Mitchell, if they view him as a corner, that's the one that's going to kind of, you know, leave a roster spot up in the air, because if they don't view him as a corner, they can add another player. But right now I'll go DeGene, Mitchell, Slay, Ringo. They brought in Isaiah Rodgers for a reason, and he was really good in his last year with the Colts in 2022. A lot of it depends on how he looks in training camp. There's a chance that a year off, you know, not playing, you know, organized football, he's just not as good as he was, and he's the odd man out. But right now, I'll go with Isaiah Rodgers, and I'll go with Bradbury until I see him. You know, if right now, I don't know if he'll be here or not, but there's no indication that he's definitely going to be gone. So right now I'll go with Bradbury. So that leaves Avante Maddox kind of as the odd man out, but there's also a situation possibly right now. You look at the safety depth, you know, you have Blankenship, you have, you know, Garner Johnson, DeGene might be able to play safety, but you know, Sidney Brown's going to be out possibly early in the season if he doesn't get clear from the ACL. And even after that, if you want to keep maybe 5 safeties, it's possible that you move over Avante Maddox to safety because he's done it before. And then also if they view DeGene as, you know, as safety, maybe Maddox makes the roster, or even a guy like Eli Ricks. You know, it's kind of an interesting situation. I wonder if it came down to a guy like Eli Ricks versus Maddox. Maddox is versatile. He, like Bob mentioned, he's experienced. He's been here since 2018, and he's been a really good player for them. But, you know, he's been injury, you know, a lot of injuries in recent years. And when he came back last year, he struggled. You know, I wonder what their mindset is. You know, do they want to keep the young guys around like Eli Ricks and even Josh Job, who was a really good special teams player? Or would they rather go for a guy like Avante Maddox? Because, you know, they believe they're in Super Bowl contention, and having that veteran presence back there matters. But, yeah, right now it looks like Avante Maddox could be the odd man out if I had to take a guess. But I think they would like a way to keep him on the roster, so maybe a safety move.
I omitted Quinion Mitchell. You know, that's not that he's got any chance of making the team.
See, it's funny, Kate, because we mentioned the safety part, and that's where I thought it was going to happen. I think it's going to happen. It's one of those things where we saw Maddox. He played safety. Granted, there were injuries to Blankenship, and they had issue and Brown, and they had issues in the playoff, in the wild card round game against the Buccaneers. But I think that's a place where they, especially since that Justin Simmons is still out there. Marcus May still out there. You got guys like that, and they haven't made a move there. And I like Tristan McCollum as a special teamer. I think he could add stuff. But the fact they really have we're rolling with 3 safeties that could be on the field, and that's it right now, I think that's a way that they try to solve part of that problem is moving by Maddox back there. Because we've all seen, especially in some of these Fangio formations, especially like say they're running a cover 6 or what have you, and teams run those 3-by-1 sets – you got half the time one of those safeties have to roll down into the box at like a slot corner. Well, what better person to do that than a person who was your nickel slot corner for since 2018? So I look at that as a potential way to do that. So I'd move him down to that.
The other great point that Caden made is that, you know, the Sidney Brown equation, and when is he going to be ready to play? So that changes the whole dynamic too.
That too, yeah, that too. He was saying he's going to be ready for the first week of camp. First week of the season, I'd slowly bring him in. I'm not rushing him. Maybe it's one of those things where I don't think you have to pup him, put him on a physical unable perform list or anything like that, but maybe it's a thing where maybe he's inactive for a week or two if you just want to make sure give him the extra time. And
I still haven't met a player who has said I'm not going to be ready when they all think they're going to be ready before they're going to be ready. So
yeah, that's my very point. True. Very true on that. Very true. If I had to look at it, the whole Bradberry thing, it's plausible, but even then, when you're looking at his impact, even from a business financial impact, if they cut him, and this is all according to over the cap, if they cut him, it doesn't count anything toward the cap. If they trade him, they get $1.2 million in savings. You got to love CBA, how that works out. But I think teams are going to look and see, you know what? They know what the situation is with him. They look at this, everybody's going to be looking at that roster. They're going to know those people are going to happen too. So I don't think they're going to trade for somebody. I don't think even if it's a conditional 6-7, what have you, I don't think anybody's going to trade or give it an asset. They're going to try to wait and see who comes off that roster. But I really think he's going to be back next year because he's shown in the past, in his career, when he struggled the year before, finds ways to bounce back. When he was in 2021 with the Giants, he struggled, comes back to the Eagles in 2022. He's an second team All-Pro. And I think with Vangio, he'll do a better job than what he had with the Desai Patricia era and making sure that a lot of these guys are in better positions and gives you more, makes you feel a little bit more comfortable having him on the roster. So I think you look at Slay and him on the outside. We've heard overtures, and I'm starting to believe a little bit more and more. Look at this. Maybe use Isaiah Rodgers on the inside. I mean, is the way his talent, the speed, the footwork, especially because basically on the outside, you don't have the whole entire route tree available to you. Slot corners, slot receivers, a whole different thing. They can run anywhere, and I think he has the athleticism to do that. So you move him inside there. So you got those three. You got Cooper, Najee, and Mitchell, which you got to keep. That's five, which leaves to you start to look at who's the other guy you're keeping in terms of young guys, and that comes down to special team spot. Well, Mitchell could be a gunner, which is that thing. But I think that when you look at Josh Jobe, when you look at Zach McPherson, and Keely Ringo as well, too, I look at those three. It sort of come down, I think, to those three guys. I really believe it's going to come down to those. And then it's a matter of who plays out well. I think the edge goes to Ringo. You use a fourth-round pick on him, so you got that. Same with McPherson. But most of the times, I know we all briefly watched the special teams part, which is like, okay, all right, cool, they're catching things. Who would have thought we were probably watching gunners and how they're doing in those drills? Like, oh, what the heck's going on? Because I think that's where the answer comes from in terms of the cornerback position. Am I wrong on that aspect?
Well, yeah, because I think you got to keep Mekhi Gardner because right now you're just kicking the league's butt in Mekhi's.
You got Mekhi Becton.
You got it.
That's cool, man. He's good people.
You got to keep two of them. I mean, one Mekhi will be lonely if you don't keep the other one.
I'm losing my mind.
The draft just fried my brain. I'm sorry.
No, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Here we go. Go to the next one here. And since we spent a lot of time on defensive backs, let's go look at that third round pick they made. So the Eagles selected Jalix Hunt with that third round pick they got from the Commanders. Jalix Hunt out of Houston Christian. If Houston Christian doesn't sound familiar, well, that used to be Houston Baptist out of the FCS school. That's here. Very athletic edge rusher, guys. But you know, he's going to be a developmental work. Basically, they're going to basically have to use a year. The first year to work him up. He's a former safety that is now an edge rusher. Six sacks when he was with Houston Christian last year in his senior year. And I'll start with Caden. I'll start with you. Do you think the Eagles reached by taking Hunt in the third round?
I won't say it's necessarily a reach because I don't know how much longer he would have lasted on the board. You know, coming into day two, a lot of people were talking about that Hunt was going to sneak in there. Some people even thought he was going to be an early third, you know, late second round pick potentially. But at the same time, just because I don't think it's a reach from a consensus standpoint of view, and then the fact that, you know, in the fourth round, you probably wouldn't have gotten him. So if you love a player, you take him. So from that perspective, I get it. But it doesn't mean it doesn't come without risk because, like you said, Chris, he's new to the position. The competition level that he played at, not very good. Yeah, and he did dominate, but he was going against guys who were not playing in the NFL, who were probably going on LinkedIn looking for jobs right now. Like, it's just – that part of it, you know, you have to be a little bit worried about how is he going to adjust. But I get it from a general perspective because late third round, kind of same argument I have for like late second, early third. What's the difference between a late third and a fourth? And you're at that point, you're kind of looking for upside. You know, it would be nice maybe if you had a more a player ready to make an instant impact, but an upside swing at the end of the third round for a guy that has a ton of potential who could grow into his body even more. He's already 6'4", 252 pounds, has over 34-inch arms. So he has all the prototypical edge rusher stuff, and he moves like a safety. He's fast. He gets up the field. Like, that's stuff that you can work with. You just have to trust that Vic Fangio has a plan, that Jeremiah Washburn has a plan, Clint Hurt, all these guys can get the most out of him. And like you said, Chris, it's probably going to be a redshirt year, so it's not going to be the most rewarding for Eagles fans. You're going to have to be patient, and it's a risk, but you know, at that point, I'm fine with taking a swing with a guy who has a high ceiling, maybe not the highest floor in the world, but right away he should be able to at least make an impact on special teams. So I'm fine with the pick. It's risky. I won't say it's a reach necessarily, though.
Cool. What about you, Bob? What do you think? You think it was a reach?
Yes. I think it was a reach. Having said all those things that Caden just said, let's remember they had the 78th pick. So that means and they traded it to Houston. And then they traded again. They had a chance to make the 78th pick is the point here. They didn't. Houston picked up a safety, Kalen Bullock, no big deal. But then, you go down the list before we get to Jalks Hunt, you trade down twice here. Some guys I like on here, and, they later got players at these positions. Jermaine Burton from Alabama, is he better than Anaya Smith? I don't know. But he's certainly drafted higher. A running back I liked more than Will Shipley is Blake Corum. I think he had 35 touchdowns the last 2 years at Michigan. Obviously very good. Roman Wilson went off the board to Pittsburgh. Zach Zinter, a lineman, went off the board. The pick that the 49ers traded to the Eagles when they moved down the second time was Dominic Puni, an offensive lineman who can play guard and tackle, something they were looking for. They passed up a lot of guys that I think could have helped them this year for a guy that maybe can help them in year two or year three. So he better be good in year two or year three. Having talked to the kid since they drafted him, he's obviously a very personable kid, and there's a lot to like about who he is. You can tell why he grew on him. Here's the other thing, though. I wonder, and we'll never probably find this out, but one pick before Jalks Hunt went Adisa Isaac from Penn State, who certainly has had better college stats. Now, obviously, more established at his position, but this guy had 24 tackles for loss, between 7.5 sacks and 16 tackles for losses last year at Penn State in the Big Ten. That impresses me more than Jalks Hunt's, physical traits, which are impressive. I'm not in love with the pick. I think they could have got more help for the 2024 season, but we'll see. And I hope for the kid's sake, that he does well in the NFL because he seems like a great kid.
And the thing I'm looking at when it comes to this pick, I hope when they describe it, it sounds like Davion Taylor, a linebacker from Colorado from 2020 draft, a little bit. The thing I hope is they learned their lessons from that previous time with Davion. Davion, when you look at the way his career went, the injuries really impacted him, and he was still trying to learn a position and just threw everything off. And basically he's become a practice squad player from here on out in that one too. I look with the Hunt, I look at the athleticism. I see the speed, the quickness you can get around the edge. And with his safety background, they don't do it a lot, but you can see if they have to drop him off in the coverage, he's comfortable because some of those areas, safeties drop down. If they drop in a box in those areas he has to cover, he's done that before. So I see the stuff in there. And I just look at he's going to be tied to two players to me. And they went after him. Cedric Gray, both linebackers. Well, we know how this team feel, treats off the ball linebackers, but Cedric Gray, Peyton Wilson. And Wilson, we all know, he had the medical stuff with him. One report said he basically doesn't have an ACL, which, so it's probably, I think a lot of teams had like the medical flag, the medical grade on their flag to bypass him. But Gray was a guy who I think Tennessee got a good get with there, and a guy who can, I think, is going to be a starter for a few years, actually. And I look at that and say, you got to hope that Hunt, especially, you got to hope that Hunt develops into a guy who's a contributor at the very least, because next year, the only guys I believe are under contract after the end of the season are going to be Bryce Huff and Nolan Smith in terms of edge rushers. You don't know what's going to happen with Josh Sweat. So you're going to need this guy, and Brandon Graham's going to retire. So you need this guy to step up and be good. It's a matter of, have they learned those lessons in order to get these guys, these developmental guys, in there and able to not only perform but to exceed. You know, and Hunt also, I think, he needs to me, relies on one pass rush move too much as opposed to like developing a counter move. That's where Jeremiah Washburn is going to be one of the most important people this offseason in terms of his development and seeing where he goes from there. So,
Chris, that's a great point about the linebackers. I think you're right. Those will ultimately judge that. Although I will say this, go back to Deesa Isaac for a second. Who's the team that drafted him? The Ravens. And when the Ravens do something, it always makes, especially on with a defensive player, I always say, they don't get it wrong very often. So that's and they like to Deesa Isaac over Jalen Hunt. So that part, and you know, the Eagles certainly could have had him if they wanted him and not traded down. So I'll just make that final point.
Yeah, I'm shocked Isaac fell that far. Because I mean, a lot of stuff I know. For me, I had questions because Chop Robinson was on the other side. How much did his production was lead to that? But especially if he was down in the third round, you gotta think a little bit about that. So it's another guy that's gonna be connected. Those two are going to be connected when in terms of their careers, if that pick was the right selection there. Now, we're going to combine this next topic up here because the Eagles made six picks after that. Fourth round, they had running back Will Shipley out of Clemson. They drafted Anaya Smith, Jeremiah Trotter, and Trevor Keegan in the fifth round. And they had Johnny Wilson and Dylan McMahon in the sixth round there. So I want to say, I'll start with you, Bob. When you're looking at out of those guys that were selected on day three, who do you believe will be the best contributor next season, and who do you believe will stand out when we look back in this draft 5 years from now?
I'm going to give you two guys because I'm going to cheat. But that day three, I think Anaya Smith is a fascinating guy in terms of just, he can do so many different things. So I'm really interested to see all that. And tomorrow for Friday, I'm going to write about, we've already talked a little bit about, they drafted three guys who are returners. As somebody who lived through the Greg Lewis experience in Green Bay a long time ago, and also the fact that there's new, kick return rules. I really like that part of the draft where they're not leaving themselves shorthanded. They already had a very good guy, obviously, returning punts, but they're not going to leave themselves shorthanded in that regard. Britton Covey being the guy who's really good at returning punts. But Anaya Smith's a guy who really interests me. And then I'm also fascinated to see if there's going to be a competition between, and I hope there is, between Jeremiah Trotter and N'Kobe Dean at linebacker. I'm just eager to watch how hungry those two guys are. You know, N'Kobe's been waiting for 3 years now to have this chance. Jeremiah Trotter, what a dream scenario this could be for this kid to play in the same place his father did. That to me is going to be one of the best storylines of all training camp, and I can't wait to watch it.
How about you, Cade?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, interesting choices there on day three. The guy that has a chance to best contribute next season, Anaya Smith is a good pick. Jeremiah Trotter Jr. is also a good pick. But there is a world where Will Shipley comes in here and he takes over the running back two spot. He adds a little more value as a pass catcher. We haven't, you know, really seen that from Kenny Gainwell, you know, early in his career, even though coming out of Memphis, you know, that was one of the things that, you know, some people expected him to be able to do. And they brought in Saquon in free agency, who's a really good, you know, talented running back. And one of the reasons that he's so dynamic is his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. So it seems like that's something that Kellen Moore is going to incorporate. And while Will Shipley is nowhere as explosive as Saquon Barkley, and he's not going to be necessarily a game changer when it comes to speed at Clemson, he didn't play behind a very good offensive line, and he always found a way to move the chains. He was a reliable pass catcher, and there might even be some more upside there. Clemson's offense wasn't very good last year, but if he can add that element to the Eagles' offense and kind of be that, and that's just kind of high praise, but if he could be a James White type of player, I'm not saying he'll be as good as that, but if he could just move the chains, and if Kellen Moore wants to, you know, use that more in the offense and have Jalen Hurts check down the ball more, Will Shipley could have a decent size role in this offense. Maybe he'll get five, maybe four touches a game, maybe six touches a game possibly, and be that RB2. That'll be a fun one to watch in training camp. And then when it comes to the long term, when we look back 5 years from now, I'll go for a little bit of an outside choice here. And one that I'm willing to bet has the physical traits. And right now, I know it might seem more like of a long shot because he's a six-round pick. But I do believe Johnny Wilson has something to him, whether that's at wide receiver or tight end. I'm not really sure. Some people think he could stay at wide receiver. He's 6'6", 6'7", whatever measurements you want to believe, but he's super tall. Before his height, he separates pretty well. That wasn't his problem at Florida State. His problem more was with consistency and drops and stuff like that, but he can move for a guy his size, and that's something you can't teach. And I honestly, a little surprised that he was there in the sixth round. I know people had his range all over. Some people thought he was like a day three pick, fourth or fifth round. Some people thought he would go in the third round. So there is something there. We've seen in the past where taller wide receivers with really good athleticism who necessarily don't necessarily fit that outside wide receiver type just because they're not as smooth necessarily, like a guy like Darren Waller, but he moved the tight end and he's been a great NFL player. So there's a world where, because he is so tall and he is fast, where he develops into a really good player maybe 2 or 3 years from now. It might not be right away. He might even be on the practice squad as a rookie, all we know. But there's a world where Johnny Wilson develops into a pretty quality weapon, whether that's in the red zone or just as a wide receiver 2 or 3 or even a tight end. So I'm excited to see him just because of the physical traits and the upside.
There's two things about Johnny Wilson now. I'm saying this off the cuff to say that. With Wilson, I would love to see him meet Harold Carmichael and those two of them stand next to each other and see talk, because Harold Carmichael was 6'8", Johnny Wilson 6'6". That would be kind of fun to see those two talking ball and sitting doing that. The other one is if the Eagles ever brought back their basketball team, he can pretty much safely be their center and dominate down the line. But I think when you look at that, that would be pretty good. I mean, now for my players, I think for next year, my favorite player in this class to look at is Anaya Smith. I really like the possibilities what you can do. He's not going to get the touches that A.J. Brown, Smith, Devonta, Dallas Goedert, and Saquon are going to get. But I like him in the slot, in the fact that if you get him, especially say if you bunch or you put him in the backfield with Barkley, you can do so much formationally with him. And I think you can get big dividends off of that. The one big thing that you look at the last couple of years with this Eagles team, and we relied on Quez Watkins, they needed him to be the downfield threat and to be the guy that occupied the safeties and be that, and even catch half of them. If he caught half of those passes, like, those nine rounds, basically going 40 yards down the field, I think this offense he'd still be here today, and his offense would be considerably better. Unfortunately, he did not do that, and that's why he's with the Steelers right now. But I look at what he can with Smith. You can put him in the slot. You can put him back there. You can, and when he gets that separation, he basically becomes a return man on the field. He uses that return, his return ability, and you can get him in small spots and he can make big plays. So he's a guy I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with in this offense in long term with Kellen Moore can, and what Kellen Moore can do with him. Now, long term, I'm looking at Trevor Keegan. With the Michigan, you know, you got the pedigree there. You know, they've won a lot in Michigan. Now, depending on what say you, if you think it was with all the cheating, at least on those defensive side of the ball, but still, what say you, he still did very, very well on that line. I like the way that he's familiar with that zone blocking scheme that the Eagles like to use in times. It's a very, the Michigan, there's some elements that I think translate well to the Eagles' offensive line scheme. I like how he gets to his second level. I like the, and I think especially one thing I look at a lot when it comes to the offensive line players, you need a certain nastiness to them. You need that guy who's going to say, you know what, I'm going to drive you to the ground, I'm going to pancake you, and I'm going to stand over and look at you for maybe for a second before I get a taunting penalty, but I'm going to look at you after I drive you to the ground and move you out the way and have fun doing it. And I see elements of his game in that. Now, the thing that's going to be it, he needs to do is learn to adapt. It's tough for some linemen. It's sort of go to the right side. I think he's better in the right side if he wants to have a chance to contribute long term, to go to the right side, because left side you got Jordan Mailata and you have Landon Dickerson there. But Keegan and Keegan played a game at left tackle, I believe, in 2022, and the rest of the time he started as a left guard. So right guard is the area where you think he has the best shot at potentially doing it. Right now, that's Steen's job to lose. And from everything, when you look at his roster, Steen's job to lose. Maybe they slide Mekhi Becton, who they signed to a one-year deal last Sunday. Maybe they try – well, he's going to, because they like the versatility there. They're probably going to try about a guard there anyway. But that's a guy that I look 5 years from now who could be a potential starter from here on out in terms of that. So I know we talked a lot – we talked about this draft class. When they look at this, giving it a final grade, Caden, what grade are you giving it?
Yeah, you know, I would have to go for A right now. It's tough to grade a draft class before they ever play. You know, some of these guys might not pan out like we think, but just from the top, to be able to get Quinion Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, who were generally viewed as top five cornerback prospects in this draft class. Some people thought they were, you know, some people had DeJean as the third-ranked corner behind Terrion Arnold and Quinion Mitchell. So to get him, you know, and to get Quinion Mitchell at the top, and then on day three, to get Anaya Smith and to get Johnny Wilson and even, you know, Will Shipley, like they're in Trevor Keegan, you mentioned it. There's a lot of guys there that I liked, and there's a lot of good, you know, good value. The only argument you can make is maybe they could have, you know, like you mentioned, Bob, in the third round, they could have got a more of an impact player right away at a bigger position of need, like maybe linebacker or safety. They could have got a better player. So that's one where maybe you can knock them, but the first and second round was really good. And on day three, I liked a lot of their picks. So it seemed like a really good draft. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen. But for now, give it an A.
Nice. And what about you, Bob? What grade are you giving it?
Yeah, I gave it a B the day of the draft and when I was bleary-eyed and just wondering where my brain was. And I think I'll upgrade that to a B-plus as I think about it more. As I've mentioned, the joke, the Elks Hunt move, I'm not entirely on board with. I'm you know, I'm hopeful for the kid's sake. To me, this draft's all going to come down to that first two picks. They needed to get better and younger at cornerback. I think they did that. I love the first two picks. That to me was the strength of this draft. You know, after that, day three picks are a crapshoot. Always are. But the thing that makes me want to upgrade this to a B-plus is the fact that in the midst of all those eight trades that Howie Roseman made, he got one extra pick in this draft, and he got three picks for next year, including a third rounder. I like that he did that because they were a little short on picks for next season before that. So he helped him out. He helped himself out. And he helped the team out in that regard. Based on those first two picks and based on doing that. And yeah, I do like some of the day three picks, but again, they're a crapshoot. We'll see where they end up. But I think it's B plus. I think it was a really solid draft. you know, but, you know, I made a point today because everybody's so high on draft picks right after the draft and with good reason. As I said, it's like spring training in baseball. If you can't be optimistic about your draft picks, you know, the week after you made them, you'll never be optimistic about them. But, you know, I looked at the 2017 to 2020 drafts because that gate, you know, you're talking about some time has passed and those guys who's still on the roster. There's exactly five players. I think they took how many is there? I think 28 from those three drafts. And there's exactly five remaining on the roster. One of them is Jalen Hurts. None of them were first rounders. One of them was Jalen Hurts. And four of them were from the 2018 draft when they didn't even have a first round pick. Dallas Goedert, Avonte Maddox, Josh Sweat, and Jordan Mulata. So it tells you this really is the not for long league. So don't get too attached to the draft picks they just made.
And I'm looking at, I keep going back and forth between an A minus and a B plus. And I wish there was something in between there. But yeah, you know what? I got to pick a side. I'm going to go more and more. I think about it. I'll give it a B plus. And I think a lot of times when I look at the, I'll go A minus. I'll stick with that. Now ask me about 2 hours from now, I'll probably go back to B plus. But yeah, I'll stick with A minus right now. When you look at the first two picks, when you look at Mitchell and DeJean, to get them in the spots that you did, I think was tremendous value in terms of that. And it helped you at an area of need, especially with the way the future was looking like defensive back with Slay and Bradbury getting older. And you just needed some more speed to get there and more abilities to get some turnovers. That's what we're struggling to create them last year. So I look at that too. To me, it's the Hunt selection is the one that brings it down a little bit. I like what he can do, but I just think that's one of the biggest question marks. And then I know a lot of people are really high on Shipley. I just have questions on that too. Like that, his ability to return, I get it. I know you need an option potentially because Gainwell's a free agent after this season. I think it's a decent pick. I just don't. I'm not really in love with it, and I know it's hard to say that with fourth round. I was like, oh, well, you should be in love with a pick, like that one too. But I just look overall. I think that an A minus B plus is not bad. I mean, you could be the Atlanta Falcons and taking a quarterback after you paid $100 million for your other one, but that's a whole other story. So, yeah, you don't have to do this. But I think we should end this show on this one. We have to address it too because it was some pretty big news. The Eagles gave wide receiver A.J. Brown another 3-year extension. And it came at times after Devonta Smith recently received his extension as well, too. And the Eagles are going to have this pairing now for a foreseeable future to go with Jalen Hurts, who was actually in the auditorium when A.J. Brown was speaking, which kind of quashes some of those rumors about them beefing and everything else like that. So I'm going to go with Bob on this. Bob and Caden, I'm going to go both of you guys on this. What are your thoughts on the deal, and what do you want to see out of Brown next season?
Well, my immediate thought is, wow, the big concern, and everybody wants to read the tea leaves whenever AJ takes to social media. Oh, is he going to be here? Is he not going to be here? What does he want to be here? Does he like Jalen Hurts? Does he not like Jalen Hurts? Is he going to be quiet? Why isn't he talking? Why, you know, all that. Well, it turns out A.J. Brown must really want to be in Philadelphia, and the Eagles must really want to have A.J. Brown because they just signed him with, what's it, for 2029? Is that right? 2028, 2029, whatever it is. They just signed him for a long, long time. I'll tell you right now, I'll be retired if he goes through this contract. So, but I'm not sure people realize just how good this guy is. If he plays the life of this contract in Philadelphia, he's going to set the all-time record that the aforementioned Harold Carmichael owns, one of the great people of all time, Harold Carmichael. And he's definitely taller than Johnny Wilson. What you guys probably have no recollection of watching Harold play. Caden, you weren't alive, I'm sure. But watching Harold play,
I wasn't alive either. I don't think I was alive either.
All right. Well, neither one of your
NFL films.
Watching Harold Clay was just—it was just amazing. He had at least one catch every game. He has the long streak. I forget what the number was, but the record for catches in consecutive games. I mean, he would take two steps and he'd be 5 yards down the field. He'd catch everything. And there's a chance that. A really good chance. He's already at 3,000 yards, pretty much 2,952. After 2 years in Philadelphia, he's already at 3,000 yards. He might shatter that record by Harold Carmichael. I covered T.O. This guy's, I'm going to say he's better than T.O. I think people have already forgotten, I don't know if it would have made a difference because the Eagles were such a mess by the time they got to Tampa Bay for that playoff game. But they played that game without A.J. Brown. Is that a different game with A.J. Brown? Well, you'd certainly rather have him in your offense than not have him in your offense. The guy, to me, is just a special player. You talk about all this stuff that I just talked about, his social media and all that, and on a scale of one to T.O. in terms of being a diva, even DeSean Jackson was more of a diva than A.J. Brown. You asked A.J. an interesting question at the news conference the other day, Chris, about what can he do now, and A.J. basically just said on Friday and Saturday nights when people were out partying or whatever, I'm working, and he just talked about he has his list on his phone and how much he works. And I hope I'm not stealing your thunder, Chris, but it was a great answer to a really good question. But this guy is the real deal. I think it was to have him in. The other thing you got to remember is three or 4 years ago, Travis Fulgham was leading this team in receiving. Now you have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith as your two receivers. This is a franchise that has not had great receivers through the years, and in a lot of years. And right now they got two special ones, and A.J.'s the leader of that group. So I just think I love the deal, obviously.
Now, two things before I get your response, Caden. One, it's always funny watching Carmichael and all those guys, wide receivers at that time, getting a 3-point stance from their typical wide receiver spot, which is always just weird to me on that one, too. And two, looking at A.J. Brown's contract, it does end in 2029. He's due a $1 million roster bonus at the time. He's going to count $29.3 million toward the cap. And the one number that really gets me is like just looking at it, how everything is situated in terms of the cap. 2030, he has a cap hit of $53.5 million. So that's going to be fun to see what happens down the line in terms of that. And it's a voided year, too. Caden, what are your thoughts about the deal?
Yeah. Bob, summed it up really well. Everyone out there that, thought there was something wrong, it just proves that, we're not mind readers. We don't really know what's going on inside of AJ's mind, but obviously everything is fine. Or if there ever was an issue, it got smoothed over. But it's got to be an exciting time, especially for Kellen Moore, knowing that you're going to have AJ and Devontae for the next 4 to 5 years possibly together. And it's this offense, it's going to be really good with AJ there next year. But the one thing that I think that I want to see out of AJ going forward, or at least I'm excited to see, is the ability to sustain, even more dominance. Last year at the end of the year kind of went away a little bit. And I think that had to do more with the offense and just the general dysfunction of it. But I'm excited to see with a hopefully for the Eagles' sake, a better play caller with more creativity, and hopefully by the end of the year the offense doesn't kind of collapse the way it did, and AJ can put up even more numbers than he did last season and get a first team all pro accolade, because I do think he's one of the best wide receivers in the league other than Justin Jefferson, and Tyreek Hill. You could make an argument he might be number three. He could make an even argument he could get as high as number two, or maybe even number one. He's that talented. You can't teach a guy with his skill set, it just comes so easy to him when you watch him play. And the thing is, the AG's been in the league, it seems like, for forever now, but he's still a really young guy, and he's got a lot of room to grow. And also another part of it is the leadership aspect. I think a lot of people, you know, nitpick AJ for the emotions on the sidelines, and maybe sometimes you could argue, maybe it looks like a bad look, but it's all up to your general perception of things. But I'm excited to see, you know, how he approaches, you know, his leadership and just his attitude and just the general perceptions of things. So I'm fine with him being his authentic self. I think it's refreshing when you see athletes not try to change. So I'm interested to see, you know, how he approaches this year with a new contract.
Nice. Cool. And we'll end it with that there. Bob Caden, I really appreciate you guys being on here again. And to everybody listening to this podcast, thank you guys very much for being on here. Make sure to subscribe. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to this podcast. Give us feedback. We want to hear what you guys think of the show as well, too. Also, make sure to check nj.com/Eagles and make sure we're coming up right now. Rookie mini camp is coming up this Friday. I believe we'll have availabilities there on Friday, so we'll get to see some of these guys in action. And then after that, it's going to go quickly. We're going to start seeing the regular OTAs with the veterans, and then eventually mandatory minicamp, which is something new under Nick Sirianni regime on that. But make sure you check nj.com/Eagles. You'll find all of our coverage about the team on there. So for Bob, I'm Katie. For Bob and Caden, I'm Chris. Bob, say that five times fast. Everybody have a good one. See ya.